And good afternoon, folks. This is the Over the Fence show here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and Free FM 89.0 throughout the Waikato coming out of Hamilton. Thanks for joining me, folks. If you're listening live, you'll be listening to those ones, or you might be on the live stream, which is going again now. Aaron's just had to do some updating, so it's been off for a little while, but it's back up again on a beautiful spring day out there, isn't it, folks? I love those gentle showers we had last night and this morning. I really do love spring. Good for the gardens, good for the grass. And so today, during the show, we'll the 101st episode of the Over the Fence show, by the way, folks. And so today we're going to be talking to Sue Court about equine therapy, which is going to be really interesting. And we'll probably do that sooner rather than later, but while we get things organised, I'm going to play a song here by World Gone Wild, produced by Mike Chan, I think it is, called Shy Shy Jenny. It's a New Zealand song out of the early 90s. And this one goes out to you, Paul. I was trying to remind you about it last night down the pub at the quiz night, but obviously my singing's not that good. So if you're listening, Paul, of course, the host of the Friday Freak Zone, Friday afternoons, 2:30 to 5. If you're listening, Paul, this is the one I was trying to remind you about last night anyways, Shy Shy Jenny.
I had a dream
you go, Paul. That was the one I was talking about. Shy Shy Genie by World Gone Wild. And I think we're going to go straight into our interview today with Sue Court. Afternoon, Sue.
G'day. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good.
I just moved this out of the way so I can watch the... I'll be looking at you. I'll be looking at the levels over there to make sure it's all going all right.
Okay.
Welcome to the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And
nice to be here.
I had the great pleasure of wandering around your property on Sunday afternoon. It was a lovely, lovely day.
Really nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really nice, yes.
A few people around who are interested in mental health and well-being in the community and all that.
Yeah.
So it was lovely.
It really was. And, yeah, like you said earlier, it was a perfect-sized group, I think, and, a lot of chat about, stuff that, that is happening and or could possibly happen. And, I came away feeling really, pumped and enthused about things.
Nice,
yeah, that was
nice.
My feeling out of it.
Yeah.
And probably part of that was wandering around your beautiful property as well, a lovely bush block and a beautiful stream. It's all drives your energy, all these things, I think.
Yeah, it's a lovely wee block. It's in Waitatuna, so halfway between Hamilton and Raglan.
Yeah.
Good position. And, it's got everything. It's got an acre or more of QE2 protected forest, some of the original forest with totara, kākatea, rimu, some of them over 200 years old. So that's really lovely. In fact, we probably pretty much bought the property because of those trees. Just so gorgeous.
Yeah.
And a river, the Waitatuna, the river of the eels, and... there are a few eels down there, but it's a lovely river flowing through, so it's a beautiful spot.
It is beautiful. I love the rocks too in the Waitatuna stream. It's quite black and kind of look volcanic-ish. I don't actually know the geology or whatever,
I'm not up with the geology. But the thing about those rocks is the sound, isn't it? Is the water running over them.
It's
so peaceful and lovely. So there are a couple of little areas where we've made sitting areas so we can sit right beside it and just sit there and listen to that beautiful sound.
Yeah.
So much nicer than listening to traffic.
Absolutely it is. And there's something really soothing. I was just talking about the rain before, like that gentle kind of rain coming down and streams and that. There's certain things that, I don't know what it is, but it's sort of kind of, your alligator part of your brain or whatever, it sort of taps into that. It's just really soothing, calming kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it reminds you that you're an animal on this planet, you're a mammal along with many others. And I was just thinking today how I was enjoying feeling the slightly cool air on my skin.
Yeah.
Thinking, just come out of winter and now I've got my skin out. And I was really enjoying being kissed by the wind. Really nice.
Yeah.
So when we do get outside and enjoy nature, it improves us, doesn't it? It makes us feel better.
Absolutely it does. And why wouldn't it? I think a lot of people lose sight of that, like, we're humans, we live in houses or whatever, we go to work in the office or whatever, but, to me it's really important actually being outside, feeling the wind, the rain, feeling the sun or whatever, and listening to the birds or the stream or whatever, wind whistling through the leaves of the trees or whatever, it's all, it's an experience, I think, that without that, you could easily, I don't know, how do I say this, Sue, get caught up in your own brain or caught up in something else that's not actually the reality,
Yeah, well, that segues nice into what we're going to talk about with my work with horses.
Yes.
Because being around a huge animal like a horse, it's like 4 or 5 or 6 times our weight, and realizing that they're gentle and kind and nourishing and interesting is a great wake-up call to many people. Not everybody has the privilege of spending time with horses or big animals, cows and the like.
Yeah.
And it reminds you that you are just another mammal. We are just another mammal.
Mm.
And the civilized part of humanity has only been a very, very short part of the history of Homo sapiens. We've been around apparently 315,000 years. Well, that's nothing. It's not even millions, let alone billions of years. And it's only the tiny last bit of it that we've been so-called civilized and that we live in nice airtight and watertight houses.
Mm. With heaters. With heaters.
With heaters and triple glazing and all the rest of it. But we need to get out and get slightly uncomfortable, you know. We need to get out into the nature, which is where we've come from.
And how long have you been interested in horses, Sue?
Well, pretty much all my life been interested in them. But I wanted to have a horse when I was a kid, but I was brought up in a city and, you know, it just wasn't possible. These days, city kids can actually have access to riding, but in my day it wasn't possible. Yeah. So it wasn't until I left home and was an adult that I was able to pursue it.
All right. And did you start by riding horses or?
Yeah, I started by riding horses. I went on a horse trek and I thought, oh, this is easy. You just sit there, lovely. Well, of course you do when you're on a trek because one horse is just following another.
Yeah.
Anyway, that first trek that I went on, I actually ended up buying the horse that I was using.
Yeah.
I went on several treks and fell in love with my horse. Mm. So they sold him to me. And he was an ex-racer, and he was a very successful racer, apparently. But once he got fed up a little bit and a little bit healthier, he was quite a handful. So that's when I realized, nah, this is not easy. You don't just sit there. It's very skillful.
And
there's a lot to learn. And I'm still learning, you know. There's a lot to learn about what a horse is and what a horse needs and how to communicate with a horse.
I suppose, interestingly, out of all the animals, I guess, you know, humans are domesticated or whatever, horses are an exception because they were like kind of like a prey animal, I suppose, back in the days, weren't they? You know, getting chased by, you know, whatever, you know.
Absolutely. They still are a prey animal. And we're prey animals too, but we're mostly predators. I mean, you know, back in the day when we were hunter-gatherers, we could have been eaten by a lion, but equally we could chase something and eat that thing. So, oddly enough, we learned how to do that very successfully from wolves by spending time with wolves. And eventually, as you know, of course, wolves became domesticated and turned into dogs through selective breeding by selecting the wolves that you got on well with most, you know. And eventually we ended up with dogs. And so we actually learned as a species a great deal from wolves. We learned how to live in communities, and we learned how to hunt, and we learned how to cooperate. So we ended up actually hunting with the wolves, cooperating with them.
It's interesting, isn't it?
And horses. Yeah, horses, we've only domesticated them for the last 6,000 years. So before that...
I was going to ask that question.
Before they were dinner. They were dinner, for sure.
Yeah.
So there's still, you know, if you walk into a paddock and see a horse that you don't know, they ask themselves a question of, right, am I on the barbecue tonight, or is this someone, you know, who's on my side kind of thing. So they're always wary, you know, even though they've been domesticated for so long now, they've still got their old native ways, their old wild ways. And, you know, horses frighten very easily if there's a loud noise, gunshot, or somebody starts up something electric,
blower or something.
Whatever. Then they'll startle. And they'll even startle at something like birds flying out of the long grass. And that's because they know that they're predominantly prey animals, and you know, anything could be out to get them. And nobody's told them yet that we don't have lions and cougars and tigers in this country. They don't know that. They still react as though it's possible. And snakes, of course, is another possibility. I spent some time in Australia with horses and snakes. Oh, boy, they can be a bit of a problem. And so horses, you know, they can react to a stick on the ground there because they think it might be a snake. But anyway, we have to respect that wild nature that they have.
Yeah.
And just like us, we've still got a wild nature as well.
Oh, for sure. Where did the original horses come from, do you know?
Ukraine.
That's where they started, the Ukraine.
Yep,
interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. And then they moved on down over the, what is it, the Bering Strait, whatever it is, over to Alaska, from Russia to Alaska, when that was still solid ground. Huh. So they migrated over there and then right down the North America.
Yeah.
And then they died out during, or they died out down there in America during the, I don't know, last ice age or something, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then the bulk of horses remained in Mongolia and in the Middle East. Well, not the Middle East, but north of Turkey, that sort of area.
Okay. Yeah.
And then people got an idea into their heads that it wouldn't be a bad idea to jump on a horse and see what happens. You know, the first human that did that, they were very brave indeed doing that, or silly.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyway, somebody tried it out, and it worked. And the amazing thing is that these animals let us do that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we had animals. I mean, without horses, we wouldn't be where we are now. You know, horses have, that we've taken them to war. The Mongolians took over half the world on horseback.
They did.
And then we even used them in World War One, and then ploughing.
The Mongolians used to drink their blood as well.
They still do. They still do.
They still do that, See, how cool is that? Well, cool, how interesting is that, I suppose? Like, how an animal like that would, like, let you sort of make a cut in them to...
Yeah, and their milk. They use their milk as well. So
it's out of it, man. Yeah.
Fermented horse milk, mare milk, is an absolute delicacy for the Mongolians. I had a friend who went there, and she went on a bit of a trip right into central Mongolia.
Yeah.
And she went to see the horses, particularly so that she could report back to us and let us know what they were like. And she had to, and she was a vegetarian, but she had to sit around and eat dried meat and fermented mare's milk and mare's blood. And, well, you know, you just have to. You can't say, sorry, I don't eat those things.
Yeah.
And apparently it's all very much an acquired taste.
No doubt. Yeah. Interesting, yeah. I wonder, who were the first peoples, I wonder, to actually ride a horse? Was it around, was it the Mongolians around there, or?
I don't know. I don't know that there's any much of a record, but... You know, there are incredible rock drawings around Europe. There's a beautiful set of them. They're about 18,000 years old.
Jeez.
In south of France.
Yeah.
And these drawings are really, really well done. Like, you can look them up. You can look it up on Google, you know, and you see the pictures are beautiful. And they're very precise about their faces and their legs and everything. The bodies are often not quite so well shaped, but the parts that matter, the bits that move and the bits that eat and the bits that look at you, very, very detailed. And what that says to me is that people have spent a lot of time just observing, just looking at horses. Now, on those particular rock drawings, there was no sign of spears or hunting or anything like that, but some of the later ones there were.
Right.
So it's obvious that, you know, that sometimes they were considered as meat and sometimes they weren't. But when horses were first ridden, I have no idea when that actually started. It's probably like a lot of things. It probably started simultaneously all over the world because, I mean, you think about certain inventions, like flying, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, there were several people doing that all at once.
It's really interesting that. I mean, what's always kind of been a conundrum for me is like how, I mean, this is kind of off the topic, but like pyramids sprang up in Egypt pretty much at the same time as they did in with the Incas in South America and that.
Yeah.
And for civilizations that had kind of nothing to do with each other.
Mm.
So they say. I don't actually quite believe that. I don't know. Like, there's something kind of iffy about the, like, you know, early human history, I think, anyways. But yeah, like for those buildings pretty much exactly the same to spring up on different continents with people who supposedly didn't have anything to do with each other. It's just
It's interesting. It could be, and with some things, that it's the time for something like that to happen. like flying, for instance.
Mm.
And there's also the fact that we communicate with each other as human beings other than using words. And there's, it's also neurologically known that there's such a thing as mirror neurons. So while I'm thinking of something, these neurons are firing away, and neurons in your head, and you're only a meter away from me, are firing away similarly. And we're influencing each other physically by sitting here looking at each other and talking to each other.
Yeah.
And there's a really well-known study that 1964, so it's going back a wee bit, and that study indicated, proved that 7% of how we communicate with each other is verbal. All the rest is non-verbal. It's to do with facial expression and what we're doing with our body, where we've got our arms and our legs and how we're standing. Yeah, only 7%.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think in all the rest of that as well, I don't know, this is getting a little kind of, I don't know, something, but anyway, there's a vibrational thing that happens with people as well, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, because, you know, as everybody knows, right? If you meet someone, you straight away, that person seems nice, or I don't think I'm going to like that person, or whatever. It's just like a natural.
Get a gut feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a reaction, you know, that's communication as well, isn't it, on some level, you know? Yeah.
Well, the amazing thing about gut feeling is that we've actually got as many neurons in our guts, in our stomachs, as we have in our brains. And so when we do get a gut feeling about something, we damn well better listen to it because it's real most of the time.
Yeah.
And I often use the example with people that the worst riding accident I ever had was when I had a gut feeling that I shouldn't have gone out that day and that I shouldn't have chosen that particular horse and that I shouldn't have gone that particular way. I just had this gut feeling, you know, that I shouldn't be, but my ego, my brain was saying, yeah, go on, just do it, you know, you've done it 100 times or whatever. But that horse was not in the right frame of mind for sure, and neither was I.
Mm.
And I should have listened.
Yeah, interesting.
Mm.
And what did you break that day?
Oh, just my neck.
Gee whiz, broke your neck.
Yeah.
So you couldn't, like, could you like feel your fingers and toes and things?
No, I couldn't. Couldn't feel a thing.
Gee whiz.
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Oh, 25 years ago.
Okay.
And I was told I shouldn't ride again.
Yeah.
But you don't tell me that I shouldn't do things because that just makes me do them.
All right. And how long did it recover from that one?
Oh, about a year before I could turn my head properly and get feeling back in my hands and feet. I've still got a little bit of numbness and thumb and fingers, but nothing serious. I did what the doctor said, so I went and bought a couple of miniature horses, and I thought, well, I won't ride, I'll just play with these horses.
Yeah.
But I kept my big ones, of course, and then eventually I thought, I'm just going to throw a saddle on and hope for the best.
Yeah, okay. So how long have you and Sarah owned the property out there in Watatina?
Coming up 10 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. We were working in Auckland, in Australia, and we came back here for a holiday, and we stayed in Raglan, and we just so happened that we'd sold our house in Dunedin. It came through, the sale came through that while we're here in Raglan, and we thought, you know what? We're terrible with money. If we just put it in the bank, it's going to disappear on nothing. So we thought, right, land bank. So we just went out, saw a couple of properties, saw this one, saw all these trees there, and thought, right, that'll do very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
So we bought it, went back to Australia for another couple of years.
Right, okay, yeah.
And, it was a great thrill to be able to come back here and finally live on the place.
For sure, And The equine training, when did you first come across that as, I suppose let's start from the start. When did you get into, counselling, right? Because you're a counsellor, right?
Yeah. Well, I was in Australia and I was working in a different field altogether, but I realised that that was coming to an end, both in terms of my interest and a particular job I was in. So I studied psychology when I was young. I didn't complete it, but I was always interested in that, and I came across this counselling training that was available in Brisbane. And at the same time, I discovered there was something called equine-assisted psychotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And like most people, I got the wrong end of the stick. I thought, oh, psychotherapy for horses? How does that work?
Yeah.
It's therapy for people in the presence of horses. And so I went and did the training for that, which was done in Victoria.
Okay.
And it was absolutely blown away. Just loved it right from the get-go.
And how long has that been a thing?
Since 1980.
Okay.
But you could say, actually, it's always been a thing with human beings, because we've always learned from animals, and we've always, especially horses and dogs, you know, they're so empathetic. And, you know, if you're a teenage girl, I don't know why I say girl, could be a boy, and you've got a pony, and you're not getting on very well with someone in your family, you know, the pony is there for you to go and cry into their mane, and you know that's the pony has been a loving companion to many a young kid, I reckon.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I almost want to put cows in that category as well.
Yeah, well, you could.
For sure, horses and dogs.
You could, but for sure. Mammals, basically.
I don't know. There's a certain a calm kind of thing for me anyway, you know, probably not for everybody, but being around cows and that, it's like a really nice, you know.
They're beautiful animals. And they've got these beautiful big brown eyes, just like the horses.
And they react as well. You know, I haven't had much to do with horses, if I'm honest, but in fact, the only, my first memory of riding a horse, my older sister Angela had a horse called Salome, and it was a white horse. I don't know what breed it was or whatever. She used to ride it around and that. And then a mate of mine one day decided both to ride her when we were quite young. So we both jumped up on her back and that, and she was nice as pie in the little paddock. But as soon as we opened the gate and went out to like a big paddock, she just kicked us off both straight away and then bolted to the other end of the paddock. So that was my first thing with horses. But I did ride her after that. But anyways, but yeah, I haven't had much to do with horses. But anyway, cows.
You were brought up with cows, weren't you?
Yeah, I suppose so. And when I think about it, there's something else I wanted to mention too. Both sides of my family were dairy farmers, right up north and here and there and whatever. And it's a generational kind of thing. And I was just talking to a guy the other day, which is kind of related to what we're talking about. And he was trying to give up smoking fags, right? So he had a silver platter and, dropped psychiatrist told him to drop, gold coins, you know, instead of going, you know, the money that you would have spent on cigarettes, put half of that on a silver platter, like the gold coins, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a generational thing that, you know, that humans have done for a long time, like, you know, it's a thing, like, oh, there's gold on a silver plate or whatever, which reminds me of, like, cows and horses, like you're talking about. How many generations have, you know, families or whatever been riding horses or had horses and things like that? So I suppose a past life-y sort of thing, but also a generational thing, you know, within us, you know, and science has kind of come to that now, the realisation that, you know, we hold intergenerational trauma, you know, or not, or whatever, and stuff like that. So it's a bit of an off-the-spiel rant, but what are your thoughts about that one, Sue?
Not sure quite where you want me to go.
No. It was just a thought I had. I was thinking about it. Just like there's generational stuff.
Definitely generational trauma.
That kind of occur.
But there's also, you know, generational attraction to mammals and to nature. I mean, anyone my age, I won't tell you what my age is. It's quite an enormous number. You know, at my age, most people would have had parents or grandparents or parents, uncles who were in World War II, and my father was, and he came back quite a damaged man. Of course, I didn't know what he was like beforehand, but but I always knew him as quite angry, and the slightest little thing could trigger him. Like back in the day, cars used to make a backfiring noise, right? Back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And if he heard that, he would hit the ground. He'd be on the pavement. Huh. Because that was just his natural reaction, his training, you know.
Yeah.
And so I've picked up a certain amount of that, you know, slightest noise, well, you know, like a door slamming or something like that always makes me jump.
Mm, mm.
And obviously I learned it from him. But there's also generations, it's believed that at least four generations, whatever's happened four generations ago influences you. And it influences you on a DNA level. It's not only environmental.
Out of it,
it's quite extraordinary, really.
Yeah. I find that all that stuff really fascinating, all of these things. Yeah. And percentage-wise, the number of people you like bring to the horses during your therapy sessions, how many people, percentage-wise, would you say roughly of are kind of like scared of horses or are connected to horses or something like that?
Well, you don't have to have anything to do with horses to do this work. Yeah. So what the horse does is the horse is an outside influence, a very dynamic external point of focus.
Mm-hmm.
And they are able to pick up everything about us. You know, they practically know what we're thinking. And it's not because they don't know English or any language, human language for that matter. It's not as though they're picking up on the words in our heads.
Yeah.
But what they are picking up on is all the chemical reactions inside our bodies.
Mm.
Like their sense of smell, for instance, is 40 times greater than ours. And that's the same as dogs.
Far out.
So they can smell adrenaline and anything like that that's activated through whatever mental state we're in.
Mm-hmm.
So they are able to reflect that back to us straight away. Now, someone who's fearful of a horse is not a problem. In fact, in some ways, it's an asset. Because if you can overcome the fear of an animal so huge, if you can overcome that fear, then chances are you have other fears in your life as well that you can overcome. So the way the work with horses goes is that they help us identify stories in our heads that we make up about ourselves. And they reflect back how we're feeling. Yeah. So, for instance, the fear thing. There are ways in which you can overcome your fear by tritating, which just means just doing a little bit and then stepping back, then doing a little bit more.
I never heard that word before. Stepping, tritating.
Tritating.
Titrating.
It's like dropping a little bit of something into the water, you know, just a little bit of colour or whatever it is. Doesn't influence the water to start with, but eventually it does.
Huh.
And so if you can walk into a paddock where the horses are and then walk out again, and then the next time walk a little bit further, and the next time walk up to a horse and pat them and what have you. But we wouldn't just be working on the fear with horses. We'd be working on what other fears do you have? And then using story, using narrative to work with those fears. Mm. Mm. So often it's happened that somebody's come to me and they've said, well, I want to do, you know, I'm curious about this work, but I am scared of horses. And we will get over the horse fear. And at the very same time, work with whatever other fear they have in life. Fear of you know, not being able to achieve, or fear of overachieving, or fear of being neglected, or fear of being alone, or what have you, you know.
Yeah. And this comes out, like you say, at the same time. So you like, I guess you're talking to whoever you're with during all of this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it's talk therapy.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
just in a triangle instead of one-on-one.
Right.
So okay. instead of just me and the client, it's me and the client and the horse.
Yeah.
And the horse just adds another dynamic to it. And it actually, you might think it's, well, somebody might think that it's a bit of a distraction, but actually it's the opposite. It actually helps us get to the nub of the issues. Mm. Much, much quicker because of this ability horses have of mirroring exactly how we're feeling. So let's take an example. Let's say somebody is fearful of horses, but they're pretending that they're not.
Mm.
So sometimes I have somebody who might turn up and say, I knew horses when I was young, yeah, and I love horses and it's fine. And it turns out they've met a horse once and they're actually terrified, but they don't want to let on because it's not manly or it's not something, not grown up or whatever.
Yeah.
And we can walk into the paddock where the horses are, or this arena area that we use, and the horses will know straight away. They will respond to the real emotion, the real mental state of that person. So they will respond to the fear because, of course, they smell it. They smell adrenaline.
Mm.
And they won't respond to the big smile on the face and go, come on, come here, horsey, you know.
Yeah.
And so then the person will say, the client will say, oh, that horse has just moved away from me, doesn't like me. So, well, let's try again. Oh, it's still moving away from me. The horse doesn't like me. Then we can talk about what this actually means, because the horse is not the horse doesn't think in terms of I like or I don't like. The horse is just moving away from something that they feel uncomfortable about, which is that smell of fear. So then we can work on relaxing. We can do meditation exercises and grounding exercises right there in the paddock. And you can guarantee 100% of the time, if we do those kinds of things, a horse will come right up to us and might even put their nose on somebody's shoulder and just sit there because they love that vibe. They love a human being who's totally relaxed and at one with where they are. So then that gives us that gives us an enormous amount of material to then discuss. As though you, in the way that a therapist and a client would normally talk about something, because the fear of the horse, you can, if somebody is being incongruent, they're pretending to be a certain way when they're actually not.
Mm.
They're most likely to be doing that out in their life as well, so they'll be most likely. Be, you know, pretending in their job that they know what they're doing when deep down they actually don't know what they're doing or think they don't know. So the thing to work on is not what they're actually doing, but the self-concept, the talk inside that says, I'm not good at this, I'm not good at that. So all that negative talk that goes on inside us,
yeah,
that's the stuff that horses respond to. And then once some of that comes up, then we can talk about it. And then we can also make stories with the horse. We could then say, well, how about we call this horse whatever your fear is, and take your horse for a walk around and see what happens. And always the client will come back and say, well, the horse did this and did that and did the other thing. And then I'll ask them, what does that mean to you? It's all about what it means to the client. It's not what it means to me. It's what it means to the client.
Yeah.
So the client might come back and say, well, the horse stopped. It wouldn't walk with me. Oh, okay, what was happening at that point? Or I might say, well, I noticed you were looking at the horse's head. So what was going on for you? Oh, so he might say, well, I was just wondering what he was doing. So I was looking at him and then the horse stopped. And then we'll discuss what that actually meant. What it meant in horse terms is that the horse was nervous because you're looking, you know, you look somebody in the face, they'll go, what do you want? What are you saying? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Hello. Hi. Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. Mm. Sorry, distracted. Distracted there. It's okay. We're on an interview.
Okay. So it's a reaction thing from the horse. Yeah, I get that. Because I suppose your chemical thing would change from mellow, feeling nice, walking along, whatever, to suddenly stopping and, like you say, looking at the horse in the face, and the horse would be like suspect, I suppose.
Yeah, well, just curious, what are you doing? What do you want of me? And then I could suggest, well, this time when you walk the horse around, how about you show the horse that you are the leader and that you do know what you're doing. So if you stop and look at the horse, then the horse will stop too. So then they learn that they have all this power to walk around this enormous animal by simply focusing ahead with their eyes where they're going, and with their energy as well, focusing on what they're doing. And then that can be an analogy for what else they're doing in their lives, you know. But there are other things we can do too, like just plain observation, observing horses. We've got seven horses, so they live in a herd. They don't live in seven individual little paddocks or stables or anything. They all live together.
Mm.
And so you see the dynamics of them working together. And what you see is a healthy dynamic that you would hope that human beings would be able to express as well, but we're not so good at it. And when a horse has a bit of a tiff with another horse, one horse might say, I want you to move because I'm going to eat that bit of grass that you're eating. So he pushes him away. What happens to the horse that got pushed away? If that was a human being, that human being would go around the rest of the day going, do you know what Bruce did to me? He told me this and that, and I'm really upset, and talk about it for a whole day or a whole week or a year, whatever.
Yeah.
A horse goes...
Stew on it, yeah.
Yeah, a horse goes, oh, well, that was my bit of grass, but whatever, and just walks off and goes back to grazing, goes and finds another bit of grass. Mm. So they get over themselves very, very quickly.
Mm.
And the reason that one horse might push another one around is simply because they're trying to work out the dynamics of the herd, where they are within the herd. They have to have a structure like any group of animals or individuals or humans.
Mm.
So there's a head mare, there's a second in command, and there's, you know, we've got seven horses. They've all got a place, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And every now and then, 6 and 7 will have a little tiff with each other, and that, just enough to say, are you still number 7? Oh, yeah, it looks like I am. You know, okay, right, we know where you are now.
Yeah.
And the head mare, interestingly, it just occurred to me the other day that they don't micromanage. You know, the head mare doesn't look at number 6 and number 7 and say, hey, I think you should be doing a little bit more of this and a little bit less of that. They don't bother with that. She only bothers with the one immediately underneath her,
mm-hmm.
unless somebody irritates her. But, you know, normally that's what she's doing. She's training up the next one who might be taking over at some stage. So it's a very interesting dynamic to observe.
Yeah.
And they look after each other beautifully.
Yeah.
You know, they take each other to water. They show each other where there's a nice bit of shade on a hot day. They groom each other. They try to groom themselves, but they're a bit awkward when it comes to scratching their own backs. So they do this thing where one horse scratches one back and the other horse scratches the other back at the same time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they're very, very beautiful animals to observe.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we should maybe wrap it up soon. So I guess tell us about how do people get a hold of you if they want to come out to Earth Horse, isn't it?
Yeah.
You call the property.
Well, it's called Earth Horse Aotearoa.
Earth Horse Aotearoa, yeah.
And if you just Google that, or just Google Earth Horse, actually, it'll come up.
Yeah.
But the website
is... You've got a flash new sign on the main drag,
too. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, yeah.
So the website is earthhorse.co.nz.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got this flash new sign up. We've been doing this work here now for... 8 years or so.
Yeah.
And we've had the sign sitting there for a year or so. But of course, COVID struck, you know, and the business dried up pretty much.
Yeah.
And so we're just, you know, relaunching for the summer.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, yeah. And can be an individual thing, it can also be a group thing or a family thing or whatever.
Yeah, we do workshops.
Yeah.
We do meditation with horses. We do befriending your inner critic with horses.
Interesting.
We do leadership with horses. So we do that in groups. Yeah. But we only take 4 at a time for safety reasons and just so everyone gets a good session out of it.
Do you do any self-love courses?
Sorry?
Do you do any self-love courses?
Self-love?
Yeah.
Well, pretty much it's all about self-love, you know.
Yeah,
it's all about discovering the voices inside your head that say that you're not good enough or you're not pretty enough or you're too fat or you're too old or, you know, and discovering the good things about yourself.
Okay. All right. Anyway, interrupted your mid-flow there. So,
no worries.
So, okay. So, okay, so up to four people. Sorry, I interrupted you there. So
four people in one-day workshops, or we do one-on-one an hour at a time.
Yeah.
So someone might turn up with a specific issue, or they might just want to experience it, to learn something. They just might want to learn a bit about themselves in a different sort of situation. When you think about it, we only learn about ourselves when we put ourselves out of our comfort zone, when we're not in our own bedroom or in our lounge watching television. We don't learn a lot there. Mm. We learn when we're in interaction with other human beings, or in this case, with other animals.
Mm.
So there's a lot you can learn from horses. I must say, I have learned heaps and heaps and heaps, and I'm still learning. They've still got something to teach me.
Fascinating. It's really interesting. Yeah. And thanks very much for coming in, sir. Really appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Earthhorse.co.nz, was it?
.co.nz, yeah.
Okay.
That's the one.
And any workshops coming up soon that spring to mind? Or?
Well, I have done it that way in the past, but, you know, advertised that something's going to happen on the 1st of December or whenever.
Yeah, yeah.
But then so often I'll get inquiries, well, can we do it on the 2nd instead, or on the 3rd, or because I, you know, this, that, and the other's happening. So now we do it a different way, which is we need four people. If you're interested in a workshop, get another three people, and we'll choose a date, and away we go.
Okay. Do you get many families coming through?
Yeah. Well, yes. We get mothers with young children or caregivers, or I work a fair bit with children.
Yeah.
And children with specific needs, like autistic children that don't communicate very well verbally. The communication with a horse is fantastic because they know how to communicate in the way horses communicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Non-verbally. and kids that have been in and out of foster homes and haven't made much in the way of, you know, strong connections with family. So they benefit a lot too from that work.
Okay. So it's pretty much open to anybody. Do you get school groups at all coming through or anything like that?
Yeah, we do. We do. And we can give demonstrations of various things. We do. We do have groups come through for sure.
All right. Okay. I was a little distracted there. I just remembered I hadn't actually put the next song on to come up after this. So that's what we're filling around.
Need a song, otherwise you and I are going to have to sing.
We could try. Yeah.
Do you have any requests?
Have a little think about it. If you've got a song request to play on the show, anyways,
I'd like something by Gurumul. Do you know Gurumul?
No.
Aboriginal singer, absolutely fantastic. He died a couple of years ago.
Okay. Well, why don't we play them straight away? How do you spell that?
Oh, well, interesting question. I think, I'm not 100%, but I think it's G-U-R-R-A-M-U-L.
M-U-L. Gurumul Death. Yeah, well, yeah, now it's coming up with something.
Yeah.
Gurumul.
Give him a go.
Stuff on YouTube?
Yes, there'd be something on YouTube.
Gurumul YouTube, here we go. All right.
Jeffrey Gurumul.
Is that the guy?
That's the one.
Jeffrey?
Yeah.
All right. Yunupingu?
He was blind. He was born blind.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, here we go, folks.
He taught himself to play left-handed and upside-down guitar.
Really?
Yeah, because nobody said this is the way. You know, he couldn't see what other people were doing.
Yeah.
So he just picked it up and did what worked for him.
Huh.
Certainly works.
All right.
Yeah.
Did you meet the guy?
No.
No? Yeah. Okay. All right, folks. Well, here's Jeffrey Gurumul with Yunupingu. Is that how you say that?
Don't ask me how to pronounce Aboriginal. I have no idea.
A hauntingly beautiful song in his native tongue. All right. So, all right. Thanks very much for coming in, sir. Really
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
You're welcome. Good to be here, Craig.
I found it really fascinating today. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks.
And I hope you enjoyed it too, listeners. And we'll play this and then I'll come back. What are we? Man, it's up us one already. I don't know. We'll play this and I'll come back and have a think about what we're going to do after that. Jeffrey Gurumul here for you folks. Request to see.
Geoffrey Gurumul Yunupingu is an exceptional man with an exceptional talent. Blind from birth, he grew up on the remote Elko Island in Arnhem Land, but now tours the world.
There's a bit of chat here, folks. Hopefully it breaks into a song soon. I just plucked it straight off the net.
His mother gave him a toy piano when he was three.
Oh, well, they've changed it.
When he was four,
but
he was playing piano accordion.
Yeah, no, look at that. Yeah, I'll try a different one. Let me try this one. There we go. This looks more promising. He's sitting there with a mic. Here we go. Geoffrey Gurumul.
Thank you.
Here we are, folks. That was Jeffrey Gurumal. Jeffrey Gurumal there. Lovely song, wasn't it? And so I'm going to play for you Parky Courts now. Almost had to start a fight and in and out of patience. Here we are.
Searching for a reason. I'm in the chaos dimension. Reasons eclipsed by tension. I want not to feel numb about death. Fighting peace is not an easy task. Breathing to see if there's any left. Breathing about how many people died yet. Can't someone tell me the reason? Trapped in a brutal adventure. If it stops, I'm having a bad dream. In and out of patience. I just can't keep it around. Most of mine's been taken. As I find out I'm out. Had a little left, but I gave it to you. Now someone's at my door, and he needs some too. Lighting up my phone, talking in my mood. And all I got left is this shit attitude. All this music's playing in my head. If it stops, I'm having an unshakable nightmare. In and out of patience, don't have enough to share. Sometimes I'm life itself. I'm neither here nor there. The MTA took the first of it. So hard underground, you could burn to death. Now you're right on time to take what I got left. Funky music playing in my head. If it stops, I'm counting on you.
All right, folks, that was Parky Courts there with Almost Had to Start a Fight and In and Out of Patience. Hope you enjoyed that one. And this is, I've sort of run a little overtime now, and I presume Harry's coming in at 2 o'clock, but I figured I'll do some weather for you anyways. So it's a southeasterly airflow for the upper North Island today, which is bringing a few showers. There's a front moving northwards over the South Island, which means a few more showers developing in the east. It's going to be east to southeasterly winds for the upper North Island from tomorrow afternoon, and the evening rain moves north of Auckland, becoming heavy, especially in the east. That rain will move southwards over the North Island on Friday with rain to Nelson and Marlborough later in the day. Strong easterly quarter winds are expected to lie over the North Island on Friday, with gales possible for coastal regions, thanks to relatively cold upper air and warm surface temperatures or humidity, plus converging winds. It means possible heavy showers and thunderstorms over the weekends. That's exciting. For the Waikato, it's a mix of sun and cloud, maybe showers today, and southeasterly winds and afternoon sea breezes. Humidity today sits around about 82%. The sun rose this morning at 6:05 and will set at 8:03, and the length of visible light is 14. Yes, indeed. 14 hours and 51 minutes. Nearly 15 hours of visible light. And the actual day length is 13 hours and 54 minutes. And tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 2 seconds longer than today. And the beautiful moon, ladies and gentlemen, there was an eclipse last night. I tried to watch it, but it was too cloudy and even a little rainy, but it was lovely, gentle rain anyway, so didn't see it. But, yeah, eclipse last night. It was a full moon also, and the moon will rise at 7:48 this evening and set at 5:45 tomorrow morning. Yeah, some of the stuff we've been looking at lately, it's an excellent time to manifest whatever you want, an eclipse and a full moon especially. And I've heard a lot of chat about the 11th of the 11th of the 22nd, which is in a few days' time, of course, coming up. So that'll be, and that's supposed to be a bit of an eclipse kind of, you know, very powerful kind of day to do stuff, you know, manifest stuff or let go of what no longer serves you or whatever. So yeah, all very interesting at the moment. And the rainfall this week, up at Tūtuai, Craig's had 5 mils. Thank you, Craig. And Callum at 3 streams has had 8 mils. So thank you, Callum. And I'll play another song, I guess. And then I'll better make way. I'll better just check, actually, if Prince Harry is going to be coming in for your listening pleasure soon. So I've got to edit this and I've got to chop a bit off because we've already gone way over an hour. But anyways, I'm going to play for you now one you would have heard before, probably. It's the Stone Temple Pilots' Vaseline. Hope you enjoy this. Stone Temple Pilots there with a Vaseline. Hope you enjoyed that. And that's it for me, folks. I've got to wrap it up. Prince Harry will be in the studio in about a quarter of an hour or something. So I better wrap it up, do some editing, and send this one away and get out of Harry's way. So thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. And thanks again to Sue Court coming in here to talk about horses and equine therapy. And very interesting chat, I thought. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. And I'll be back next week. Mi haere ho, I've got to go. And have a lovely, lovely week. Enjoy this beautiful spring weather. And hopefully we get a bit more rain. Thanks for listening, folks. I really appreciate it. And, yeah, catch you again.